Hello and welcome to episode 30 of Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life. My name is belatedly Marcus Freestone. Apologies for the lateness of this episode. I've been meaning to record since the weekend, but as usual, physical and mental exhaustion have just rendered me just... And so this message that I've had from a listener is very apposite and timely. She says, "What I struggle with in life is making sense of what really matters and what gives my life meaning. I have a life I enjoy, but I struggle with having enough mental and physical energy to go easily through a day and also through life. I have enough to be grateful for, but will often look back at the past and feel sad or bitter about things that have happened. It feels as if I have my handbrake on and can't move forward in life with lightness and purpose. There are times that I have fun and enjoy life, but usually I get up in the morning with heaviness in my body and soul and have to read or meditate myself out of it. Deep down, I'm actually a very positive person, but I suspect the world we live in drags me down. I would like life simpler and with less choices thrown at us. Maybe you can make a podcast on what matters in life and also on how to be focused and have purpose." Well, thank you very much to that listener for that very timely and apposite question. The episode I was planning to do this week is about dreams and the subconscious. Don't panic, not in a Freudian sense, but on dreams of the subconscious and how you can use your dreams as an indicator of the positivity or negativity of your subconscious, however it may be, and what you can do about that. So that will be next week's episode. So I'll be talking about sleep and the importance of sleep. But the listener doesn't mention insomnia or sleep problems, just the general mental and possibly existential fatigue. And that's something I've been dealing with my whole life, so I'm deeply qualified to talk about this. I've been told that even as a baby, I wouldn't sleep properly. I know I don't have any children, but I know babies often awake in the night and keep you awake, but I believe babies are supposed to sleep during the day, and I didn't. Apparently, I slept normally in hospital, and then as soon as I got home a few days old, I just would not sleep. Now, although I never lived with my father, he had terrible insomnia, so there may well be a genetic component to this, but maybe there was an environmental factor as well, in that the first year of my life, we lived literally right next to an airport, you know, within a few hundred yards of the runway. So maybe the noise of planes constantly taking off and landing was something that confused me as a baby and kept me awake. But I would not sleep unless I went for a ride in the car. That was the only thing that would soothe me. And I have struggled with what David Baddiel called Olympic insomnia my whole life, and that's a large part of the reason why I haven't done any podcasts for the last 2 years and why I'm late doing this one. Sorry again. Now, we know from many recent scientific and psychological studies in the laboratory that some people are genetically morning people, you smug bastards, and other people are night owls. And I am very definitely a night owl. I know from periods where I haven't worked and have been left to my own devices that my natural sleep cycle is 5 a.m. to midday. And if I can stick to that, then I'm fine. But it's not very conducive to communing with other people and having a relationship and being out in the world. And for me, it's a particular problem because my girlfriend is the exact opposite. She needs a solid 8 to 10 hours sleep every night. And just as she's going to sleep is about the time that I'm really coming awake, and I want to have an in-depth conversation about about the brain and the universe and all the things we talk about on this show. And that's just when she's going to sleep, and it is a problem that I will that I will often keep her awake in bed till past midnight, long after she should have gone to sleep to get up for work in the morning. I'm self-employed, I don't have to get up in the morning, so I'm rambling on to her and having interesting conversations. She says, why didn't you bring this up earlier when I was awake? I said, oh, sorry, I was kind of asleep then. But so that, yes, that is a problem. We are, in most senses, we're very compatible. We have an absolutely wonderful relationship, but genetically we are the complete opposite, and that is a problem, and it's a common problem. So in next week's episode, we'll be looking at the research about sleep and how important it is, and also about dreams and the subconscious, and how you can use that as a check for how your brain is dealing with your life and how it's processing your memories, etc. But for this episode, we're going to focus on the message I had from the listener. So she says, I struggle in life with making sense of what really matters and what gives my life meaning. Well, we've talked about meaning before, and in my view and the view of many people, certainly if you are not of a religious or metaphysical persuasion, which I am not, then meaning is something that doesn't exist out there in the universe. As I say in the final paragraph of the book, the universe and human existence is neither meaningful nor meaningless. It just is. In my opinion, meaning is a abstract metaphysical concept that has been invented by human beings. It's not an actual property that you can ascribe to something. However, in psychological terms, meaning is of profound and vital importance to us as human beings. And if you feel that your life is meaningless, then you struggle massively. And I can attest to that, because for many reasons, I found my life meaningless for decades. And it's only through a hell of a lot of study and watching lectures on YouTube and listening to podcasts and talking to my wonderful girlfriend and working things out that I've come to accept that my life does have meaning. But my life has meaning because I have made a conscious decision to ascribe meaning to myself and to my relationships. Our lives don't have an inherent meaning. We have to ascribe meaning to them. In other words, we have to invent our own meaning by our thought, our actions, and our relationships, and what we do and how we live. That's what gives our life meaning. We're not born with meaning attached to ourselves, and that's why a lot of people struggle with nihilism, something else I can attest to, because I drowned in a sort of Nietzschean nihilism for decades. So what matters and what gives your life meaning is, the point is, it's an individual process. It's an individual system. There isn't an inherent global or universal meaning that everyone is plugged into. Things that are meaningful to me would be meaningless to a lot of listeners, a lot of people in the world, and vice versa. So you have to work out what your own sort of pocket, or you have to work out the pool of your meaningfulness, and you plug into that. You can't plug into someone else's meaning or a sort of overall pre-prescribed meaning, because there isn't one. There isn't a collective meaning to life. It's subjective and individual. And I struggled with this all my life until recently. When I was 7 or 8, I used to lie awake at night thinking, what's the point of it all? What's the meaning of life? And as I conclude in the book and in previous episodes of the show, the reason why so many people struggle with this is that they think there must be a collective meaning of life. And there isn't one. You have to find your own individual one. So, if you want to explore this further and you want some more answers, then go back to the previous episode. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but the episode is called The Meaning in Life. And that goes into all of this and how important finding your individual meaning is for your mental health and well-being and living a purposeful life. And that is very important as well. Meaning and purpose are human inventions. They're not pre-existing elements of the universe or human life, but meaning and purpose are obviously interlinked, but they're different. But if you feel your life is meaningless, then it will lack purpose. And one of the things we know about mental health is that one of the most vital things is having a purpose. And one of the best ways to stay mentally well and happy is to constantly set yourself meaningful to you, not to other people. That's another important point. You have to live a life that's meaningful for you, not a life that's meaningful for others. Because I see so many people who live a life for other people. People take jobs or careers and spend their lives living a life because it's the life that their parents or other people think that they should live. And that doesn't work. That leads to misery and meaninglessness and a lack of purpose, because it's not your purpose. It's somebody else's that you've imprinted on your own life. So you need your own meaning, your own purpose. And what you need to do once you've worked out your meaning, your purpose will come from setting a constant setting of achievable short-term goals. Not unrealistic ones, not, oh, in 10 years I want to be here, or, you know, 30 things to do before you die. I hate those bloody lists. I think they're actively harmful to a lot of people, because like a lot of this awful reality TV we have now and a lot of this egregious self-help stuff, it gives the idea that if you're not, you know, if you haven't, you know, written a novel or swum with dolphins by the time you're 30, that you're somehow not measuring up, that you failed. That personally, I have no interest in swimming with dolphins, and I don't see that as a failure. And all these sort of bucket lists of things to do before you die, it's too general. You need to come up with your own personal list. It's subjective. You can't follow somebody else's. So the listener says that she struggles with having enough mental and physical energy to go easily through a day and also through life, even though she has a lot to be grateful for and enjoys her life in general. And yes, I struggle with this at all. It's a terrible phenomenon in the privileged Western world that so many people are unhappy and miserable and find their lives meaningless. In fact, studies have shown that not that poverty makes people happy, but that wealth and privilege make people unhappy, because it results in a situation where you struggle to find meaning. And a recent study found that the people on the planet who have the lowest incidences of mental health problems are a primitive tribe, so I forget where it is, but in a jungle somewhere where they have no modern technology, no contact with the outside world, and they are still basically hunters and gatherers. So they are living the life that we have, that evolution has designed us for. They live a life where they get up with the sun, they go to bed when it's dark, and they walk for 5 hours a day hunting for food, and their purpose and meaning is survival. But they don't have all these anxieties of, oh, I have to get to the office, I'm going to be, you know, stuck in a queue in the supermarket, I have to have the latest app on my iPhone, all this crap that, you know, that just melts us and wears us down. They don't have all that. And they're the happiest people on the planet, living a simple life. They don't have the, you know, the jarring beep of a horrible electronic alarm in the morning. They don't have, you know, the harmful influence of television and phones and laptops keeping them awake at night. They're living a natural life and we're living an unnatural life. And an unnatural life is less meaningful than a natural life. And we do struggle to be grateful for what we have because we live in a world of capitalist consumerism where we're constantly told no matter how much you have, you need more. And indeed, the whole advertising industry was invented by somebody who was, I believe, a relative of Freud. I watched a very good 3-part documentary about this a few years ago. I forget the name of it now. If I can find it, I'll put a link to it on the website. But basically, in the 50s, when television was becoming prominent and advertising was a thing, they used Freudian psychological theory, which I personally have no time for, but in this case it works. They essentially, the whole advertising industry was and still is based on fooling us, lying to us, and fooling us into believing that happiness and contentment comes from consuming more and more, because obviously that's how advertising works. And it's essentially a form of brainwashing. And so the way that products are sold to us is you will feel better about yourself and you will have more of a standing in the world and other people will find you more physically and sexually attractive if you buy this product. And if you look now at the way so many things are, well, so it's a bit of a game that my girlfriend and I play. I don't have a television at home. I've really no truck with it. There's very, very little that I watch. My girlfriend has a television. And whenever we're watching adverts, I think 70% of them, we just stare at the screen going, what is this advert for? Because it's like a sort of 30-second bizarre sort of film trailer. And then you get to the end and there's a little logo that says what the advert's for. And I've lost count of the times I say, what the hell does that advert have to do with that product? But what it is this whole Freudian nonsense of you need this because it's giving you all these things, which it clearly isn't. And so many things are sold blatantly on, basically, if you buy this perfume or this car or this whatever, then you'll be more likely that more people will want to shag you. That's as venal and Freudian as it gets. And it's just bollocks. It really is. I mean, for various reasons due to my upbringing, I have never really cared what other people think about me. And it's only because I don't want to embarrass my girlfriend in public that I make a slight effort on my appearance. I mean, really, you know, I mean, I shave once a month if I can be bothered. I really, you know, I mean, I'd be quite happy to, you know, just everyone have a sort of almost like a sort of communist uniform where, you know, everyone just wears blue boiler suits, everyone looks the same, and therefore no one looks any different from anyone else, and you don't have any choices to make. But on the other hand, when I was forced to wear a school uniform, I hated it. So a contradiction there, but then we're all a mess of contradictions, aren't we? So the whole advertising industry is, you need to, I mean, keep up with the Joneses is a common phrase, which given that it's Jones, it must have originated in Britain. And in fact, Jones is a common Welsh surname, and I live in Wales, so maybe my ancestors are responsible for the whole concept of keeping up with the Joneses. I've no idea why they chose Joneses. I mean, if it was an English thing, it would be keeping up with the Farquhar Johnsingtons or something. I don't know. Anyway, so the point is, the whole advertising industry and the whole point of a lot of films and this whole reality TV nonsense that I absolutely abhor and have nothing to do with is, you're lacking something and you're not fitting in. In fact, yes, that's what it is. It's the whole, oh, if you don't have this, you're a nerd, you don't fit, you need to be accepted. And a lot of people are highly susceptible to this, and it really pains people. Thankfully, for whatever reason, I'm immune to this. I well remember that when I was in school, when I was a teenager in the mid-80s, there was a big deal was made about what brand of trainers you had. It was the first time that sort of thing happened. And I just had, you know, I had very little money. My parents never bought me nice clothes, and I had no money of my own. So I just had cheapy, unbranded supermarket trainers, and I did not give a toss. And I remember one kid in particular who was obsessed with having a 60 quid pair of Nike Air trainers. And this is 35 years ago. You're talking today's prices, sort of, you know, $250, $300 or something. I mean, just insanely expensive. And what, you know, but it was all about the branding. And I've never understood that. I just literally don't care about the brand of things. But a lot of people do, and that's the whole advertising industry. And people, you know, I remember hearing about, someone told me many years ago about a friend of hers who would only go out with a guy if he wore Levi 501s. And I just thought, I hope I never meet this empty-headed, vacuous piece of crap. Because, I mean, just how pathetic is that? How meaningless is that? But anyway, I'm getting off the subject as usual. So, yeah, no matter how much you have, it's difficult to feel grateful for it because you're constantly told, well, yeah, you might have this, but what you really need is this. And you need, you know, you might have an iPhone, but oh, you need this upgrade. Oh, yeah, you spent a fortune on that phone 6 months ago, but oh no, that's not cool anymore. No, to be a real person, you need the new one. And I mean, there's, I think the iPhone now is £1,000. I mean, for a phone, a telephone with a camera on it, £1,000. I mean, oh, Jesus wept. He would have. And I weep as well. It is awful. Anyway. But another thing the listener says is, do you know what? I think I've been going on for quite a while now, and I think it's going to take two episodes just to go through this long and very informative and interesting message. So I'll just cover another couple of points. She says, It feels as if I have my handbrake on and can't move forward in life with lightness and purpose. And that's something I can certainly relate to. I remember when I was 7 or 8, I just kept thinking, I can't wait to be an adult. Part of that was I wanted to get away from my stepfather, but I can't wait to be an adult and make my own decisions. And I was constantly thinking, I can't wait for my life to start. And then I got to 40 and I realized I was still waiting for my life to start. Whatever sort of magical thing that was supposed to happen, I always thought one day I will just magically become an adult. I'll wake up one morning and I'll go, aha, I'm not a child anymore. Now I'm an adult. I know my purpose, I know the meaning of life, and I can get on with my life. And I'm 48 in a couple of months, and I still don't feel like an adult, and I still don't feel that my life has started. But it has. It started 48 years ago, and in the blink of an eye, it'll bloody be over. So I've just got to get on with it. And that's a common problem, again, for all the factors that we've talked about already, and many others as well. But the feeling that the handbrake is on, in fact, I was talking with my girlfriend recently and she was congratulating me on how much progress I've made in the last couple of years. And I thought, yes, I mentally and psychologically, I have come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. I am a much, much calmer, more focused person than I was even 2 years ago. But the point is, whilst intellectually I acknowledge that, emotionally I don't feel that I've progressed in the last couple of years in many respects, because I'm still living in the same flat that's a bit horrible and damp and not a nice area. And I don't have any more money than I had 2 years ago. Not that I want to be a millionaire, but I want to have enough money to live a decent life and take my girlfriend on holiday and stuff. And I don't have that money at the moment. So I look at my surroundings and it doesn't look like they've changed. Therefore, I don't feel I've progressed when I have. So when she says, I feel as if I have my handbrake on, I'm sure if you actually look at your life and say, okay, where was I mentally or spiritually 5-10 years ago? I'm sure if you really think about it, you'll be able to acknowledge intellectually, if not emotionally, that yes, I have made a lot of progress, but maybe because of all these conflicting and egregious messages that we're getting, because you haven't suddenly become a millionaire or moved to a massive house or bought a ridiculous expensive car or something, maybe you feel that you haven't progressed, but you have. We progress every day, you know. Sartre said we remake ourselves every day by our decisions. We're a different person today than we were yesterday. But because we look the same to other people don't often acknowledge that we've changed. And because we, for whatever reason, we see ourselves so much through the eyes of other people, we don't acknowledge the progress that we've made. And it's such an erroneous view of the world and ourselves, and it's such an intractable problem, and it's so harmful. But you really need to, God, this sounds so hippie-ish and wanky, but you really need to look inside yourself, and you need to form a realistic assessment of yourself, of your state of mental well-being, based on the truth that you feel, that you know in your own brain, rather than reflecting yourselves in other people. And that's something we're going to talk about in the next episode, about dreams and the subconscious and how you can analyze and learn useful things in your dreams, not in a Freudian way, but in a scientific, psychological way. You can analyze your dreams and learn useful things about what is going on in your subconscious. It's dreams are the best way of assessing what's going on in your subconscious. And that's very important because everything in your subconscious bleeds into your consciousness and drastically affects the way that you behave. And just the final point, the listener says, there are times that I have fun and enjoy life, but I usually get up in the morning with a heaviness in my body and soul and have to read or meditate myself out of it. Well, it sounds to me like that's probably related to what we're going to talk about in the next episode, because even though your daytime may be filled with joy and happiness and wonderful relationships and a solid, comfortable, material life, and you may be satisfied with your everyday life, but when you go to sleep at night, your subconscious will be assessing not only what you've done that day, but it will be filing it away and relating it to the rest of your life. And if you grew up, as I did, with a pessimistic, depressive view of yourself, then no matter how great your life is, if you haven't done the work on yourself, if you haven't sorted out the relationship between your conscious and subconscious self, then no matter how wonderful your life is, your subconscious brain at night will be feeding a lot of negativity into your dreams, and you will wake up feeling like crap and feeling that your life is rubbish when it empirically isn't. And that's something that my girlfriend is constantly pointing out to me. She said, well, yes, I know that, you know, you've never had the money to buy a house or a nice car or whatever, but you have so much and you have so many opportunities and you've achieved so much. But I just, you know, I came from a relatively poor background in 1970s Western terms, and I've never really got out of this inferiority complex that I have, and the fact that I don't deserve material success and happiness. And even though I've achieved so much in my life creatively and intellectually, and I'm really proud of myself for the fact that I am at nearly 48, that I am actually a functioning human being, that I am relatively mentally well, and I am working hard towards my ultimate goals, and I am making a lot of intellectual and creative and personal progress. But I know all this. I know my life is pretty great, but emotionally I still have this frightened child thing of, oh, I'm not allowed to do that. And okay, that's going to have to be the end of this episode. I've gone on for a while and I am still half asleep, and I hope this is all going to make sense when I edit it down. So hopefully I will do another episode in a couple of days and address the rest of the listeners' question and all the things that have come up in my own mind from recording this. And then next week we'll move on to dreams and the subconscious and how you can use that to eradicate the problems of self-sabotage. Getting it back to last week. See? So, there you are. I've no idea really of half of what I've just said, because I really am struggling to keep my eyes open, and it's only a litre of Pepsi Max that's just given me the caffeine to get through this. So anyway, that's this episode. I've been having problems with the RSS feed. I hope that's going to sort itself out in the next couple of days, but this episode will be up soon. And also, I have finally sorted out the Patreon page. There'll be a link to that on MarcusFreestone, is it? Yes. I can't even remember my own website. Oh, God. Okay. Right. Chill. Okay. Marcus. I can't even remember my own name. Oh, God. MarcusFreestone.com/positive-thinking-and-the-meaning-of-life. You know it by now. There'll be links to the Patreon page. You can sign up and donate to that for as little as $2 a month. I've done it in dollars, even though I am British. Although, who knows what's going to happen to our currency in the wake of Brexit. And in fact, doing it in dollars, I'm doing myself out of money because the pound is so... Oh, God, let's not go there. Anyway, so for $2 a month, you can support the podcast, and you don't get monthly extras for that, but you get a free, lovely album of relaxation music that I've just done and I'm very pleased with. And it's not the usual plinky plonky fake panpipe nasty stuff. It's proper kind of orchestral ambient electronica sort of stuff. It's about 55 minutes and I'm really pleased with it musically. So you sign up for $2 a month, you get that. If you sign up for $5 or $10 a month, you get that album plus an extra monthly episode of the podcast. And I'm working on sort of doing a written blog or something, but you'll get some extra treats. So if you could do that, that'll be wonderful, or a one-time donation through PayPal. If you can't do that, then send in some questions and rave about how great this podcast is on all your Facebooky, Twittery, interwebbery things. So I'm going to stop talking now because I don't know what I'm saying. See you soon with the next episode. Hope this makes sense. Stay positive. Bye bye. Thank you.